Okay, let's start with a little bit of practice then. These days, life is often very busy. It goes at high speed. We're going at high speed in a high gear. So we need to really practice coming back into neutral. Learning to have these spaces. We let everything go. When people see the Dharma, they often talk about how it feels as if they've just put down a great burden. So we need to practice with that feeling. And we put the burden on ourselves. So as much as possible, we just breathe out, we let go. And without making it another darn thing to do, just relax. Let things be as they are. But still present. Is still within the mandala. So all around Adishtana, there are still the three circles of protection. The soft, open lotuses. The open lotus is protecting us. Encouraging us to let go of all ill will. For open-hearted compassion. as the Great Vajra War. Protecting us, encouraging us to let go of craving. And practice equanimity, complete stability of mind. And then there's the great circle of flames. Searing heat. Protecting our mind. Encouraging us to penetrate into, to see through, to challenge and confront wrong views, let them be burned up in the fire of wisdom. And we're seated within the mandala. Taking our seat, taking our place. In our retreat community. Participating in a field of practice which benefits us, which benefits all of us, which has benefits for the world. The heart of the mandala are all the qualities of awakening. That's what we're focused on. And currently they're particularly appearing in the beautiful green form of Tara. So we'll chant our mantra, and while that's going on, as usual, would be an offering on behalf of all of us.
Om Tare, 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 Tare,
letting the mantra carry on sounding in our heart with that tune or however it wants to be. The sense that we're taking wisdom and compassion into our heart. Into our whole being. Every level of body and mind, right down to the double vajra, right in the depths. We're pervaded by love, compassion, and wisdom. Then we feel, we imagine the sound of the mantra going out from our heart, as if our heart becomes a transmitter of love, compassion, and wisdom, going out to everyone here. that we all become part of a field of compassion and wisdom. And that field expands. The mantra goes out to everyone within the mandala, everyone at Adishtana, to Bhante, then out in all directions, out into the world. And when we're ready, we relax any effort. The mantra carries on, that's fine. If it fades away, that's fine. Just coming back to neutral. Letting everything rest with awareness. So yesterday, like we did a lot yesterday. So I talked a bit about mindfulness and keeping a mindfulness that's relaxed, that's easy, that's flowing, that's sustainable. So again, as I'm talking, you might just want to keep a little bit of your attention down in that area below the navel, if that works for you, with a sense of breathing easy. Or you might just want to give 100% attention to what I'm saying. So in general, where are we? We're working on integration, and we're using the breath as a support in all sorts of different ways. And we have a goal of integrating the physical, the emotional, the rational, the imaginative, or the imaginal, the intuitive, and any other faculties that we can find. And to do that, we have a mandala, which in a way is the mandala of our life. And we're putting what's most important to us, what our heart longs for, what will really fulfill us, at the center of it, and aiming to for everything else to come into relation to that. And to help us do that, we're keeping in touch with our sources of inspiration, and we're keeping in touch with our existential situation. The four reminders. And we've looked a little bit at the preciousness of human life, and particularly working into that via gratitude, which is it's has such a uplifting effect on the mind, and can be a real source of joy. And we need all the sources of joy we can find. But then that precious opportunity is a limited offer. Everything is impermanent, everything disappears, including these five skandhas. And yesterday I talked a little bit about the third reminder, which is that actions have consequences. That, having seen that we have a precious opportunity and that it will go, we take action, and the actions which we aim to take are the ones which will bring us happiness, the ones which will be fulfilling, rather than the ones which will lead to more dukkha, the ones which will end in tears. And skillful action always ends in happiness, unskillful action always ends in tears, in unhappiness. In the Tibetan sources, they're quite down to earth and sort of grounded. So Jangan Kongtrul in The Torch of Certainty, he says, well, it's like planting cereals. You know, when you plant buckwheat, you get buckwheat. When you plant barley, you get barley. Yeah, and it's never the other way around. Yeah? So we just have to be really, really clear about that and take that into our being. And yeah, there's lots of going on lots of different levels, isn't there? So yesterday, was it still yesterday we did that Tonglen meditation? I think it was. Yeah. And maybe it was yesterday that we ended up with our body as a sort of field of loving kindness too, within which there was the breathing and the feelings and the sensations and the thoughts. And then I think we did something sort of about breathing in with gratitude and breathing out as if it was our last breath, or as if it could be our last breath, as a way of connecting with the first two of the four reminders. And then later in the day, we spent some time devoted to Tara, and then we kind of took up residence with the double Vajra as the basis for our life and our development, and certainly the basis for our meditation. Something very stable, which would help us to unfold all our potential. So that's kind of where we're up to. How am I doing? Maybe it's time to answer a few more questions before we go any further. Maybe it's time for the orange. I don't know if you all saw the orange. The orange appeared in the question bowl. This very orange here. And written on it was, "Who am I?" Now, the questioner didn't sign their orange. I assume it isn't actually the orange that's asking the question. It's a stand-in for a retreatant. And so I can't actually answer them personally, which would be much the best way. Somebody has written an answer further down. It says, "William of..." Those of you who come across William of Orange. Oh dear, this orange is such a provocation. I've been teaching the Dharma for over 40 years. I've never had a question on an orange before. But it reminds me of a story. Which some of you may have heard, but I'm going to digress and tell it. Because it does sort of make a point, not a point about anything we're doing, but it is a Dharma point. Years ago, there was a very renowned Tibetan meditation master called Kali Rinpoche. And he was one of the earliest Tibetan teachers to come to the West, just visiting. And I actually met him on my first contact with Buddhism in Semyeling in 1971. Yeah, he'd spent years and years in retreat, a very strange sort of face, sort of all kind of angles. Anyway, at one point he went visiting the States. And he was in New York, and there was another Buddhist teacher in New York at that time, and this is back in the time where Buddhist teachers were very, very hard to find, and he was a Korean Son master, so a follower of sort of Korean Zen, let's say. Some of the Western students of these two masters thought it would be fantastic to get them together, get these two enlightened people into the same room and just sit around and watch what would happen. So there were negotiations, and it was agreed that they would meet, and they would meet in a restaurant in New York. Because it's only still very small groups, tiny first beginnings of Buddhism in the West, really. So they, at the appointed hour, the Korean master turned up in his robe, and Kali Rinpoche, very small, sort of wizened, but with considerable energy. He turned up with a small retinue of a translator and other people who look after him, all monks. And there were the Western followers, all sitting there waiting to see what would happen. So what happened was this. The Korean master got up and approached Kali Rinpoche, and out of his robe he produced an orange. And he said to Kali Rinpoche, What is this? Which is the kind of thing you do in Zen. What is this? Yeah. Because what are you going to do? If you call it an orange, you deny its reality. We know it's not an orange. In the Heart Sutra will say, you know, no eye, ear, and nose, no orange, yeah? Orange is just a concept. But if you don't say anything, well, you know, you have to communicate. So what are you going to do? So all eyes turn to Kala Rinpoche. And it's translated for him. And Kala Rinpoche turns to one of his attendants. And the discussion starts. Witness every attention, and eventually, Kala Rinpoche gives his answer to his translator. And the translator says, Rinpoche says, what's the matter with him? Don't they have oranges where he comes from? And all the Western students are just, you know, oh. This is this meeting of two enlightened masters. So it really shows the need for a common language, doesn't it? Yeah. However good our insight might be, you know, we need to be able to communicate with one another, which means that we need, you know, common ways of talking about the Dharma and common ways of meeting around it, so that we can really come together, because otherwise it won't happen. Anyway, so, yes. Meanwhile, this orange is still asking me who it is. And I haven't got time to really go into it, is the answer. If the person who wrote this orange likes to drop me a note, we can have a discussion. In September... there will be another retreat at Adhisthana where we have the grand finale of this series of retreats, and because of technical reasons, we haven't been doing them in the right order. So the last one will be on spiritual death. So definitely the answer will come there. But I suppose just for now, we could say that part of understanding who we are involves going into our assumptions about who we are on very deep levels. So really questioning the story that we're telling ourselves and the concepts that we're using. For instance, who am I? There's all sorts of assumptions in there, aren't there? In those three little words. There's an assumption that... we are a who, so to speak. There's an assumption in am. There's assumptions about existence and non-existence. And I, there's assumptions about subject and object, all sorts. So yes, we need to look into... right, not just into, you know, the story about... we tell ourselves about whether we're a good person or a bad person and da-da-da. We need to really kind of go, you know, peel back all the layers of wallpaper right back to the fundamental kind of building blocks with which we describe our world, to realise that they're all just descriptions. And we need to get beyond all those into the actual experience, into direct experience. Yeah, so one whole approach to insight is to just keep doing that, go deeper and deeper and deeper. And we can also just, if we just keep letting go and letting go and letting go, we shall discover eventually who or what, if anything, we are. So as in the six element practice, kind of the essence of the six element practice is that there's this deep letting go, relaxing, letting go of what clearly isn't, or when we look into it, clearly isn't I or me or mine. So that's not much of an answer, but we've got a good story out of it. And it's this, it's a kind of one or two pointers at least. So let's do one or two others, yeah, quickly. I was wondering about turning towards my experience when it's just random thoughts. For example, a memory from a book I'm reading, an image of my grandson eating a boiled egg. They just pop in my head. What to do? It sounds very Indian, what to do. If random thoughts just pop into your head, I would let them just pop out again. You can experience them while they're there, but without being identified with them, you just let them come and let them go. Yeah? It's like an English we talk about, you know, things going in one ear and out the other. Well, when that happens, in a way, there's no problem. Yeah? But usually we hang on to things, which stops them from just popping in and popping out. But it is actually in the nature of everything to be impermanent. So when we let, if we really let the flow of thoughts just come and go, they're not a problem at all. We often feel in meditation, thinking is a problem. But actually the problem isn't thoughts that pop up. The problem is that we hang on to them and then we add a second thought onto them and then a third thought and a fourth thought and away we go. So in general, in the Buddhist tradition, there's quite a lot of talk about no thought. Actually, that doesn't literally mean no thought. It just means that there's no energy going into craving or aversion. So then things just arise and disappear. Yeah. That's really what no thought means in most of the texts. One more. Dear Vasantara, I find that it's often difficult to fully let go. Something can hold me back. Some of this I feel is habit, but perhaps also some fear. Is it just a case of cultivating more faith and being more familiar with, quotes, holding to nothing whatever? Yes, well, we can talk blithely about letting go, but in experience, it's not always that easy to do, at least not to a depth. And we often feel that there's something holding us back. And yes, some of it is habitual. And yes, there's almost certainly some fear in there, usually. So, if we find it difficult to let go, again, I'm going to have to give you a sort of very short answer. These questions we could spend days on. First off, it's worth looking at what you're telling yourself or what you're imagining will happen if you do let go. Because there can be a sort of instinctive fear that comes up. You know, there you are relaxing, and suddenly there's something in you kind of contracts as if something is about to happen that you're really not sure about. And with that, all you can do is just keep working with relaxing and getting used to being on the edge, as it were, of that next stage of letting go. So yeah, that sort of instinctive level, you just keep sort of gently working into. But quite a lot of the fear of letting go comes from the story we're telling ourselves. It comes from what we're telling ourselves will happen if we let go, or even just telling ourselves that what will happen if we let go is could be unpleasant, could be scary, and that just holds us back. So we need to investigate what will happen. What do I think will happen if I let go? What's my objection to letting go? And get all that as clear as possible. That's if this keeps happening. And then, yes, it is partly a matter of cultivating more faith. Something which I find really helpful, which I'm sure I've mentioned a lot before, is just looking at people who I feel confident have let go deeply. So when I look at those people, when I look at Bhante or some other people that I've met, that really encourages me. So there I am, maybe I get to some point in my practice where I don't like the look of the next bit. There's some kind of letting go that I'm not sure I want to do that, thank you very much. At that point, I look at those people who I'm sure have been through the next bit. And I look at them and I think, well, they're freer than me. They're more relaxed than me. They're wiser than me. They're more loving and open-hearted than I am. So, okay, I'll give it a go. So, yeah, I find it really helpful just to think like that. I'm not doing something which nobody has ever done before. I'm not just sort of leaping into the abyss. I'm kind of leaping after all these fantastic people over 2,500 years who were all, as it were, waiting on the other side to say, yeah, that was well done, that was worth it. And the more we're working as part of our general practice to relax and let go of stress and tightening in body and mind in general, the more that kind of gathers momentum and it kind of gets easier to let go in a larger way when we need to. Okay, so those are a few little thoughts in there. Let's do a little bit of meditation. So we'll do a little practice in letting go. Just notice any responses you have to me saying that. So over time, we build up very positive associations with letting go. Letting go of the burden. Letting go hopes and fears. So that eventually we let go of the whole ego project. So let's start by connecting with the ground. Call to mind the double vajra. And just feel that stability, that strength, that support. Relax, let go, and entrust our weight to it. The double vajra encourages us to take up our full space as Dharma practitioners, so we let the upper body open, rise up towards the sky. And then we bring awareness into the body. She's never been like this before. How is it now? Exploring with a kindly awareness. Open, receptive. Listening as best we can to whatever's there. Now being particularly aware of the breathing. How is it? Where do we feel it? How do we know we're breathing now? Now let's pay particular attention to the out-breath. And with each out-breath, see if we can have a feeling of letting go into a sense of spaciousness. So we breathe out into a sense of spaciousness. And during the in-breath, we just rest in that sense of space. So breathing out, letting go. And during the in-breath, resting and relaxing in that sense of space and openness. Ready, not focusing on anything particular. Just aware of whatever's there.
Thank you.